Wake up call!
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
A Gal Media property. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, we have made it. We have got the NFL draft tonight, a night where lives are going to change. Well, yep, and we're going to be able to hopefully have a season to see exactly how the teams might change. We know the players, right? They're going to get drafted. They'll sign their deals. There'll be an anticipation of an NFL season. But, you know, then comes the fall, and then let's hope that there's a season to see exactly how this is going to play out. If your team gets a grade A tonight with your draft picks, you want to see it on the field. If your team gets a D, you're hoping that they're all wrong, that everybody's analysis is wrong. Joe Burrow is going to be selected number one. The Bengals have already told him that. There was no surprise there. By the way, Vegas had Burrow, get this, at minus 100,000 to one to be the number one overall pick. Now, like, it's the only way Burrow will not be selected number one is if, sadly, he would be like in a car accident or something and he got really, really hurt. That would be the only way that that's going to happen. Let's hope that doesn't occur. So Burrow's going one. Now the big question will come at two. And in all likelihood, Chase Young will go at two to the Washington Redskins, but you're not really sure. Then the gamesmanship will happen tonight. Then three, and everything else following that is all open game. Who's going to be moving up? What will the Dolphins do with three first-round picks? Are they going to actually use them all, or are they going to be packaging those deals and hitting the phones? Are the Chargers really content with Tyrod Taylor at their quarterback position? They could get one of the guys. They could get either Justin Herbert or Tua Tagovailoa in that sixth spot. Will they just stay there and just take whatever's left, or will they make a move to get the guy they want? And what about Tua's injury? That's the big question mark tonight. If he falls, how far will he fall before a team that needs a quarterback will jump up to get him? Is it a Brady Quinn, Aaron Rodgers situation for Tua tonight, where the hip surgery and the uncertainty around it makes teams just a little wary? Because by all accounts and all of the analysis, Justin Herbert and Tua Tagovailoa are grading out about the same. And if you are a team, does the hip surgery scare you enough? And what will that mean for his draft style? All tonight, even though we're on remote locations for the NFL draft.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, we are going way back today, Throwback Thursday, 1962. Why are we going to 1962 today? M-E-T-S, Mets, Mets, Mets. The expansion New York Mets win their first game in franchise history on this date, after starting the season with 9 straight losses. They would finish the season with 120 losses back in a 160-game schedule, finishing off 40 and 120 with a 25% win percentage, the most losses of any team in Major League history. That has been almost met by the Detroit Tigers and the Baltimore Orioles of 2018. They came the closest to losing 120 games, but no one has ever done it except the expansion New York Mets of 1962, led by Casey Stengel in their first year, playing in the Polo Grounds while Shea Stadium was being built in Queens.
If the Orioles and Tigers did equal the Mets' losses, would it have been the same, though? Because they play more.
Yeah, they play a little more, yeah.
So you'd have to put an asterisk next to it, right?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, they play two more games, but still, yeah, you still have to say, oh, you had more chances to lose.
That's right.
So that team, the Mets of 1962, Roger Craig, you know, remember him?
Yeah.
Giants.
Giants manager. Long-time Giants manager.
He was on that team. Gil Hodges was on that team. How many else? Now, the Mets, interestingly, would win the World Series in 1969. So it didn't take all that long for them to win a championship. So 7 years later, they were champions of baseball, beating the Baltimore Orioles in the World Series. And they had Tom Seaver and Nolan Ryan and number of other good players.
So that's what good drafting does for you.
That's right. That's right. That's right. So celebrating the 1962 Mets, there was a book out called Can't Anybody Here Play This Game? That was a line Casey Stengel had expressing his frustration over the team. So there you go. That's our Throwback Thursday. So this should be really good for music that us when I were around to listen to back when it came on the radio. That old, turn the dial. Listen to the sounds of 1962. So, Mets, an expansion team after New York lost both the Giants and the Dodgers to California. They own the colors of both of those teams. That's why they have an orange and blue color scheme, if you will. The Metropolitans of New York. There you go.
And I think might be the unofficial team of Wake Up Call.
It might be, yeah, because we kind of like to have fun with the Mets.
We do like, that's why when it came across that, hey, they won their first game on this day, it was like, ooh.
Yeah, that's right. We went, kind of appealing. Had a couple of others that weren't all that awesome, but we also said, we got to go with this one.
We had some good,
were there good ones? I thought we were going,
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar playing
game. I'm sorry, my bad. That was a good one, yeah. But we decided to lean towards the Mets.
Also on this day, the same day that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar played his final game, Nolan Ryan lost a no-hitter in the ninth inning.
Oh, goodness gracious. What if he gotten that one?
And on this day in 1989, three big storylines happened in 1989. On this day in 1989 as well, Troy Aikman selected number one overall.
Oh, nice.
Not you, but your brothers, Dallas Cowboys.
Dallas Cowboys, that's right. That's right. Okay. Well, see how much the Mets matter to this show?
We still went with 1962. Much better music in 89. Yeah. But we're going to go way back.
I had a feeling we did 89 not that long ago.
We have.
Yeah.
I'm certain we have.
Yeah. Well, we haven't done 62 yet.
We haven't done 62.
That's right.
Believe me, I was looking over some of these music selections. I'm like, whoo.
Yeah.
God, it's going to be fun. Oh. It's tough to find something peppy in 1962.
Oh, I can't wait.
You might have heard one of the more peppy songs right there by Elvis.
There you go. Draft tonight. Are we ready for this? This is any sporting event we've had in a month.
You know, in hindsight, I think we should go back to Adam Schefter's plan and spread each round over 7 days.
I think
now that we're here, we need to go back and go, you know what? He was right.
He was right. At the time, I thought it was a dumb idea. Now I think it's a great idea. Now that I've seen the world without any sports to buzz about.
Man, well, can we spread this thing out? Can we add more rounds, NFL? It's not too late.
That IT guy for the Lions, though, doesn't want to be in the Winnebago for 7 straight days.
Doesn't matter. Who cares about that guy?
Got to be in that
Winnebago. We don't even know his name. He's just IT guy.
No, he's just IT guy. He's just IT guy.
Cousin Eddie's Winnebago.
So listen, I was saying at the top of the hour.
Real quick though, I mean he's pretty comfortable in the Winnebago, but if they don't mind shacking up the kids,
yeah, right. So like I said tonight, I think the draft goes easy for 1-2. I don't think you can see any movement either one. I think the Bengals got their guy and the Redskins get their guy. The Lions, it's up in the air. The Giants are interesting too because here's what's been going on in the draft buzz. For those who are kind of haven't been paying attention to what's going on behind the scenes, there was a buzz that the Giants have been talking to Justin Herbert's camp, the quarterback out of Oregon. Now they took Daniel Jones last year, but this is nothing. This is going to be turning out to be nothing because what people are analyzing this buzz about the Giants talking to Justin Herbert is not so much the Giants leaking that, is that Justin Herbert's camp told that story, because what they're hoping for is there's some believability to that and that teams will go, wait, are the Giants at 4 really interested in Justin Herbert? We better make a move to go get him, because that means more money for Justin Herbert and, you know, and his agency if they can get him picked at 4. But now there's if the Giants go, look, well, yeah, obviously we're not using a quarterback. We got our quarterback and we're going to take an offensive tackle, or we're going to go with Isaiah Simmons out of Clemson. If they stay where they are or they trade, whatever they do, Justin Herbert and Tua Tagovailoa there was a thought process that that one of those two guys is going to the Dolphins at five. Now they're talking about the Dolphins possibly moving up to get an offensive tackle in this draft. How much of this is pre-draft just buzz? How much of this is speculation and just putting some pieces together? We get it every year. You're not 100% sure. But imagine if both Justin Herbert and Tua Tagovailoa fall past Miami at five, unless Miami moves up or whatever. What happens to one of those guys is going to be similar to the trajectory of Aaron Rodgers or Brady Quinn, where teams don't need a quarterback, and they're all going to be on the board, and those guys are really going to take a tumble down to, to the middle of the round, possibly. One of them is likely to do that. When the pre-draft thought process, or at least early on before people started putting the puzzles together, was that the Dolphins would, if everything stayed pat and nobody moved, the Dolphins would take a quarterback at five, and the Chargers likely would take a quarterback at six. So both of those guys would be off the board by the time you got to seven. I don't know if that's the case now. It's possible both of those guys will be available after six. It's possible both of those guys will be available. Maybe one of them is available all the way down to the middle of the draft. Again, there's a lot of this is on Tua, Tua's hip surgery, and how much do we believe surgeons who did the surgery and say, nope, he's not only fine, he is not even going to be injured. This won't even lead to a future injury. Like, any injury he gets is any injury any other quarterback is going to get. He is not going to be hampered by this in any way that will cause further problems. If you buy that, then he grades out a little bit ahead of Justin Herbert. If he don't, if you're a team that is nervous about that because you haven't been able to do your full array of tests and analysis on the injury, then Justin Herbert is going to get the nod in your camp because they're very close in terms of quarterback. They're very close to being, graded together. I mean, Tua's got an edge in some draft guides that you might find online. But it's not much. It's not gigantic. There's not a huge separation between these two guys. So that's tonight, I think, is going to be. My other question is, you've got running backs in J.K. Dobbins. You've also got a running back in DeAndre Swift. Where running backs in the first round have become almost toxic. Like, you don't really go there. You can get your running back later. There's no need to go there in the first round unless it's an Ezekiel Elliott type of player. But both of these guys are pretty good, and I wonder if there's anybody that is going to be take them in the first round, if not late. Both of them got first/second round grades, but I wonder in the recent years, we've kind of, very few running backs have kind of pushed themselves into the upper echelon of the draft and where they're going there. A lot of great defensive players on the board, including, as I mentioned, Isaiah Simmons. Obviously, Chase Young is there as well. Alabama has its normal array of players that will be going tonight. I think the odds of the over under on the amount of Alabama players taken in round one tonight is at 5.5. So, I mean, that's, 5 to 6 Alabama players could go in the 32 picks tonight.
I mean, I could see that.
Oh, sure.
That's I mean, it sounds a lot, sounds crazy, but isn't that pretty much the norm for Alabama?
Yeah, that's what they do. That's the kind of factory that they've got.
So, I mean,
we're
not going, what was it, Clemson last year? Their defensive line went in the top 10?
Yeah, right.
2 years
right.
ago?
Well, with Alabama, you've got Tua, of course, and then you've got, then you've got Ruggs and Judy, the two wide receivers.
Yep.
You've got a number of guys on the defensive side. Xavier McKinney is one of the guys as well. So they've got a plethora of guys that have been graded out
talent. Why Alabama is just a machine year in and year out.
Yeah. And again, that leads to that. That is the kind of stuff. I mean, just to shift gears to college basketball, about 10 years ago, Kentucky had a whole bunch of players going in round one, and John Calipari was there making sure the cameras were on him as a recruiting tool, right?
Yep.
Because that's exactly what you do.
That's what you want.
When you are a college basketball coach and you've got players that are being selected in the NBA draft, you need to make sure you're getting the word out to recruits. Look at where I am tonight because these guys played for me and this is where they ended up. It's exactly the same in college football.
Let's look at the Heisman ceremony this year. Ed Ogeron was front and center.
Sure, exactly.
I mean, and a lot of times you don't see the coaches there.
Yep, exactly. So you know, Nick Saban, if you're a kid that you know you're a five-star athlete and you're looking for a place to go for 3 years to 4 years, depending on your desire to play college football. But if you're going for at least 3 years minimum, who are you going to play for that allows you to have tonight's moment, right? Who what program is going to put you in position? So nights like this, you are one of those people that gets the, you know, gets to be in the conversation as going on a Thursday rather than a Friday or a Saturday. And Alabama's always been that kind of program. It's front and center. So they've got the horses again tonight. All right. On Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's. It's exciting. I mean, listen, we've had a month and a little over a month off of no sports that have any value or meaning, and now we've got it tonight with the NFL draft. More thoughts on that. Plus, Major League Baseball has come down with the punishment for the Red Sox severe. We'll talk about that coming up. It is Wake Up Call. Tony D, Ron Culver.
Johnny Angel. Johnny Angel. You're an angel to me.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Going way back, 1962, celebrating the New York Mets' first win in franchise history. On this date, they would lose 120 games their inaugural season under Casey Stengel. But it's their first ever victory as an expansion team into Major League Baseball. By the way, real quick, how hard that must have that been for the people in New York if you rooted for the Giants or the Dodgers to lose both teams to California?
Yeah.
Like, New York is the epicenter of baseball. Three franchises, all successful at some point in their history, right? And then they leave. And then you go and you have the Yankees for a couple of years until the Mets show up. God, that must have, especially in Brooklyn. I mean, how important the Dodgers were to that borough. I know, because my grandfather was a, you know, diehard Dodger fan. My father was a, you know, a Mets fan because he was a couple of years after, you know, after he was born, the Mets came into existence. But he grew up knowing about the Brooklyn Dodgers. And they just left. And they go to Los Angeles. And the Giants leave to go to San Francisco. And you've got these fan bases that don't want to root for the Yankees. They hate the Yankees. They have nobody to root for. So they root from afar. You know, for the franchises that are always on the other side of the coast.
But don't you get the feeling? It was kind of like how the Cleveland Browns
right
happened. I mean, you had this franchise just ripped from your heart. But a short time after, I mean, you know, the NFL recognized it and, you know, baseball recognized it early on. It's like, no, we got to bring another team back.
Yeah.
We're losing half the city of New York, half a marketing, advertising market that. We can't get them to root for the Yankees.
And again, it's right because you've got, it's just not natural for a Brooklyn Dodger fan to root for the Yankees just because they represent New York. It's not, I'm rooting for New York. You're from Brooklyn. You're not from New York, New York. You're from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
That's the Bronx. That's the Yankees. They're different. They're, you know, people
they're
in
over
the Bronx,
there. They're so far away from us.
I watched a documentary on HBO about the Bronx, and it talked about like Alan Alda and Colin Colin Powell. Colin Powell. Sorry, number of people who are from the Bronx that were talking about growing up in the Bronx, and it was funny because they all said wherever they were. They said, no matter where I was in the world, wherever I was, people would ask me where I grew up. And I said, the Bronx, right? And they never said, I grew up in New York. They said, I grew up in the Bronx. And it's the same thing in Brooklyn. Like, I remember my father always saying, when people said, I'm from Brooklyn. I even say that. People say, where were you born? I go, Brooklyn. I go, I don't say I was born in New York City. I say I was born in Brooklyn. I grew up in New Hampshire, but I was born in Brooklyn. And so you have that sort of identity, and then the two teams leave, right? The two teams you're rooting for, they leave. No matter where you're from, if you're rooting for, the Giants who played at the Polo Grounds or Brooklyn Dodgers who played at Ebbets Field, both of them leave. So now you've got this team that's gonna have a stadium in Queens, and you got to root for them because you ain't rooting for the Yankees. And so that's the 62 is the first, and they went 40-120, so abysmal. That's got to be terrible. You expect an expansion team to lose. Remember the Diamondbacks? Remember when the Diamondbacks came into the league in 98? And then they, you know, obviously your expansion team, you lose games. And they didn't have a good record. And then that winter, they got Curt Schilling and Randy Johnson.
Yeah.
And they went to the playoffs the next year with both of those guys.
Well, it also reminds me of the Jaguars and Panthers.
Yeah, they both were in the championship games the second season. Of existence. That's great.
That's why when the Golden Knights did what they did, we were in awe.
Oh, in awe.
Because that's not supposed to happen. Even though they make it so it can happen now, you know, that where they get the extra draft picks, they get
exactly.
the pick first. You get to choose from each team before you can, you know, try to put this team together.
Right. And all of a sudden now you got, you know, teams that are getting success. You know, it's funny, you brought up the Browns, and that has always been one of my more fascinating stories in sports. How, like, whenever a team leaves a market, you don't get the sort of sympathetic reaction from the league office.
Right.
A lot of times, you know, the Seattle Supersonics won an NBA championship, but when they left, it was like, what are you going to do? David Stern was like, I don't care. You didn't build us an arena. Go eat cake. I don't care. You know, but when the Browns left, the NFL realized, yeah, this is not going to work. Like, we got to fix this.
Yeah.
Like, we really have to figure out a way to get them a team again.
We're not going to say we messed up.
Right.
But, you know, we'll make sure that you're next on the list of
yeah.
City that gets team.
Go to, like, Roger Goodell is not in any conversation at all is trying to get a team back to St. Louis.
Right.
Like he is not going, oh my God, St. Louis, we got to get back there somehow. We'll have 33 teams. I don't care. We just got to give St. Louis. That's what they did with Cleveland. They were like, we got to get them a team and then we'll figure it out later. And that's where they got the Houston Texans. But they were like, I don't care if it's unbalanced. We have got to give that city a team. And then they give them the team and they go, here's your team. And by the way, it can be exactly like it used to be. Same team name, same uniforms. Here's your history. You can keep all of that. Nobody gets to do that. Nobody in sports gets to do that.
No.
Nobody.
I mean, the Baltimore Ravens don't have Johnny Unitas in their hallways.
It's as if Baltimore is an expansion team and the Browns just took a couple of years off.
Right.
Right? But that's not the way it is. It's not the organization.
If we really look at it, the Browns took a couple of years off to better themselves.
That's right. Just took to better themselves. Unreal.
No, but I mean, to that point, if Jacksonville up and moves to London,
right?
Are we going to be scrambling to get Jacksonville an NFL team?
Not at all.
No.
Had your chance. Blew it.
Yeah.
Had your chance.
Not our problem. San Diego lost a team, and
better example.
No one is trying to figure out a way to get a team back in San Diego until they have an NFL stadium.
That's right. That's right.
No one cares.
Better example.
Best city, best Super Bowl city in America.
Same thing with Oakland.
Yep.
Same thing with Oakland. It's like,
although the Raiders will move back in 10 years.
Yeah, they'll figure it out. but again, that you just
Raiders will go back. I can't quit you, Oakland.
That whole history of the Cleveland Browns. From the moment they left to the moment they got a new team in 99, yeah. Like it's amazing how the league just went, we are making this happen. We are going to give
somehow,
them
some way,
because they were leaving a devastated fan base. I mean, look, I think all teams that leave a devastated fan base, but you know,
Browns,
I mean, just,
you know, we talk about St. Louis,
NFL,
you can talk about St. Louis, you can talk about San Diego. They're, it doesn't feel like they're that devastated.
Yeah, you know, I guess. I mean
not
St.
To,
Louis.
I mean, I'm trying to compare them to Cleveland. Cleveland, yeah, I mean, you ripped the soul out of Cleveland when you took away their football team.
But you know why? I'm not trying to minimize the pain of losing both the Cardinals and the Rams, because they've lost, St. Louis lost two teams.
Right.
Two NFL teams. But it is synonymous with being a baseball city, right? That,
yeah.
They talk about St. Louis being one of the top baseball cities in the country. Cleveland was always, even with the Indians, as deeply trenched as the Indians are in baseball lore, they were always a football town. That was a major football town. And to lose the Browns, it just felt like, I didn't like the Browns. I hate the Browns, right? But even I felt bad for them in 95. Even I felt like, holy cow, that is
even you were willing to protest in Cleveland.
Yeah. I was like, this is devastating.
Start singing Cleveland
holy
rocks.
Cow. Same thing with the Colts. I mean, when the Colts up and left in the middle of the night to Indianapolis, same thing there. I mean, just a crushing blow for, you know, for a city.
Yeah, it's, but the NFL didn't scramble to get them back in 3 years.
Yeah, not yet. No, they did not. In fact, it actually, if Cleveland had played their cards right with giving all you know, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Jacobs Field at the time, a new stadium, a new arena for the Cavs. If they had done their due diligence and actually gave Art Modell the money he needed for a new stadium, the Browns would have stayed. It was, that stadium was such a dump and falling apart. He really had no choice but to be courted by a city of Baltimore.
Let me tell you about a place somewhere up in New York way, where the people are so gay, twisting the night away.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hi, thanks for joining us. 1962 Throwback Thursday, the Mets' first win in franchise history. Speaking of baseball, Major League Baseball has come down on the Red Sox.
I came down hard
on the Red Sox.
How are the Red Sox ever going to field the team again?
I don't know. I mean, they might as well just disband.
Pack it all in. Fenway, shut your doors forever.
So the Red Sox get this punishment. They lose a second-round pick. The guy that has parted ways with the team anyway, and Alex Cora, has been suspended until the end of the 2020 season, whatever that may look like. And they don't get to utilize the services of replay systems operator JT Watkins
for one year.
So JT Watkins, Brutal. You can't be employed by Boston in their potential run towards a 2020 championship.
I mean,
that's it.
No words.
That's it.
No words. I mean, I take the flags down, pack up the banners.
Stealing your way to a title in 2018.
Dismantle the green wall, the green monster now. There's no point in baseball in Boston anymore.
If I live in Houston, this is how I would perceive it. Right or wrong, it doesn't matter. This is just perception. I would say, my God, Rob Manfred certainly wanted to make an example of my organization. Didn't mind everybody talking about hitting my team and throwing at my players and making us the scourge of Major League Baseball. And then when the coronavirus happened, it looked like this was like, let's make this as quiet as possible. Let's make sure nobody remembers the punishment to the Boston Red Sox for their 2018 season. That's how I would look at it if I was an Astros fan. Even though there are some devil in the details, I would be livid if I was an Astros fan over this.
I give Manfred credit because this type of punishment he should have just dropped on a Friday afternoon about 5:30,
exactly.
6 o'clock.
I was surprised they didn't drop it tonight while they were drafting Chase Young in the second pick of the draft.
That might have been better.
Slide it in during draft news. While everybody's buzzing about the draft, just sneak in a little, the replay guy for the Red Sox has been suspended and Alex Cora is out for a year.
Yep. No, the season.
The season, I'm sorry. Well, the season, that's right, because at the end of whatever this may look like, he gets to come back like Jeff Luhnow and A.J. Hinch get to do.
Yeah, you can hire him.
And Alex Cora is getting hired again. He's like A.J. Hinch. He's getting hired again.
Come on, young mind.
Yeah.
He was popular.
I mean, the Red Sox loved him. Red Sox players loved him. The front office loved him. Fans loved him. I mean, he was a popular guy.
How did Major League Baseball find that he had no clue cheating was going on in his organization?
That was the other side bar to this, this finding yesterday was they didn't even punish Alex Cora for what he did when he was manager of the Red Sox. Very much like A.J. Hinch, they just basically said, he should have known. He didn't know. And oh, by the way, he did stuff with those awful Astros.
That's right.
And so, therefore, he's being punished for that.
He's being punished like A.J. Hinch was punished.
Right. Exactly.
So the way this was summarized, I think this is the best way to summarize it. The Astros, the jokes about the Astros, cheating scandal, banging trash cans, that'll probably go on for another 10 years.
Right.
The Red Sox, maybe 10 weeks.
That's right. No, good point. Great point.
By the time we get to October, are we even going to think about the Red Sox being involved in a cheating scandal on the way to them winning a World Series? No.
And here's the thing, and I think that's the larger issue here, in all seriousness. I think if I'm, again, if I'm an Astros fan, I am looking at this going, wait a minute, hold on. There's two perceptions here. There's two images here, and they're not right in my world. And again, listen, I'm not saying the Astro fan is right or wrong. I'm just saying he's going with emotion. His team is now forever branded with this in a way that is very hard to overcome, right? I mean, you have branded the Astros. Rob Manfred allowed the Astros to be branded with a cheating label that they're not going to shake off immediately. There's always going to be a little doubt. Whenever they get success in the near future, it's going to be questioned, rightfully or wrongfully, by people who are going to say, you know what, that organization is a problem for me. I don't like the Astros. I don't like what they did. This Red Sox situation is almost, oh, well, they did a couple of things, but it wasn't as bad as Houston. Let me remind you, it was not as bad as Houston. And in case you're wondering, it's not as bad as Houston. That's the way I would perceive it. If I was living in Houston and as an Astros fan, this is not going to carry any weight with people with the Red Sox. It doesn't feel the same. It doesn't feel like there is a huge, gigantic anvil that's been attached to what the Red Sox did in 2018. Now, look, the devil's in the details here. I understand. When you have a team that is banging a trash can, right, and we've got video of that where you can hear the trash can, and you've got one guy that is suing because his whole career was destroyed because they were banging a trash can, I get it. And in the Red Sox case, what JT Watkins did is a little bit more complicated, and they only did it with a man on second base, and, you know, but that's not really the point. If I'm Rob Manfred, I have got to make a point to these teams. We're not playing around here. This isn't going to be, I cheated on my wife a little bit. This is, you cheated on your wife, right? I mean, to put a degree to this level of cheating, to not make sure that everybody's in line on this, especially when you warned these teams before, I'm not playing. All right. I don't care if you only do it in certain situations. You're not doing it at all. And that's not what came out of this. That's not what came down. And again, here's the other point of this. Just like the Astros scandal, no player was punished. Now, look, I understand why they did that. Okay, I understand. They wanted cooperation, so they wanted the players to come clean. They wanted to sit with a player and go, look, nothing's going to happen to you, but I need to know exactly what happened. We've got to put a little, okay, well, blah, 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 blah. Okay, I understand that. But going forward, Manfred's got to make a point to baseball players. Okay, we didn't punish anybody for the Astros, and we didn't punish anybody for the Red Sox. But going forward, you guys are getting hammered. Because we are not going to let you guys just do this while your general manager and your replay guy take the fall. We're not doing this anymore. If you get caught utilizing technology to steal signs, or you're part of a scheme to steal signs, you're going down. And you're going down in this, and we're going to sit with the players' union, and we're going to come up with a reasonable plan of suspensions for anything associated with this. So until they do that, why wouldn't you still steal signs if other people are just going to take the fall for it? Right? I mean, and how much is JT Watkins willing to take the fall for this Red Sox scandal?
Yeah, because are we going to remember his name next week?
Exactly.
I mean, at this point, I think it's on every team in Major League Baseball to hire someone just to fire him later.
Why not?
You know, just that's what it feels like. It's like, oh, this is the guy. This is the ringleader who did it all. Don't worry, we'll fire him later, but I mean, get us a ring first.
Because the prize at the end of the rainbow is a champ. It could be a championship, and if you just get one guy that's, you know, the fall guy, or as they like to call it, the bag man, right? The guy that, you know, the guy that he's no. I'm sorry, security officer. It's his marijuana or it's his drugs. Now you have these organizations that can find that guy. They can find the guy. It's all his fault. He's JT Watkins. You think, honestly, he's the ringmaster to all of this with the organization? He was the mastermind of the sign stealing scandal that hit the Red Sox? Of course not. He was told to do this by somebody. He was told to help put this together. I don't care what they find on this. There's no way he went to this team and went, hey, guys, I can come up with a system to steal signs. And they went, what? You got to be kidding. No way. Well, it's unethical. We don't really want to do it, but we'll get back to you. Of course not. There's no way. But he's willing to be the fall guy because every organization needs one. And they found their guy in this. You know, let him be a hero. Let him get a ticker tape parade. But again, there is no deterrent here based on these two suspensions for players to do this on their own. If you're not going to have a league that is going to come back to the players and go, guys, we're not going to be messing around with this in the future. This is not going to be, you guys can find a way to steal signs and I'll just tag your manager or general manager or the replay guy with the crime. And that's what it feels like. But again, image is everything in this situation, and the Astros are not going to shake this. The Astros are not going to shake the image for a while, but the Red Sox, I mean, maybe it's a coronavirus thing. I don't know, but this is a little blip on the image of an organization that has been around forever. This is just a minor hiccup. Whereas the Astros, you're questioning the entire organization. They've been the laughingstock. They were the laughingstock of sports right up until the coronavirus outbreak canceled everything. I mean, we would go maybe a day or two between remember every day it felt like somebody was being asked, as spring training was being opened, they would ask prominent players what they thought of the Astros. Remember what, like, oh, they got a hold of Mike Trout, they got a hold of Bryce Harper, or they got a hold, I mean, they were asking guys specifically about the Astros. Like, oh, it's opening day of spring training here in Mesa, Arizona, and the buzz was about the Astros. And I'm like, they're not going to shake this the whole season. They're going to go 162 games this year, they're going to be on the road, they're getting booed, all the players will be just vilified for this, for the whole season, if not longer. The entire organization, you'll chuckle when you talk about the 2017 Houston Astros. When they go, oh yeah, let's see, who won championships back in the late 2010s? Let's see, there was the Astros. Yeah, right, the Astros. Ha, ha, ha. That was what Houston was getting out of this deal. Is that happening to the Red Sox? No, not at all. There, you know, maybe a Yankee fan or two might snicker at this,
but there is no
weight to this at all.
Yankee fan will definitely have fun with it.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, it's just a small little blip on
right
your Red Sox lore.
And again, the two managers of these two scandals are both intelligent, smart, brilliant baseball minds that are very well liked and will get jobs the second these suspensions are over.
Easily.
Especially Hinch, but definitely Cora. They were talking about possibly bringing him back to the Red Sox. Now, they just took the guy they just hired, they gave the interim tag to, they just took that off of him. So he's going to end up being their manager. But Cora is getting a job again. Lunau, we'll see. We'll see. But that's it. There ain't going to be any big scarlet letter hanging over anybody's neck when it comes to these two scandals. But the Astros as an organization, yeah, this is staining. But Red Boston, nah. And if I was a Houston fan, just taking it on face value, I'd be livid. I'd be absolutely livid. All right, again, hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It is draft day, so more of the possible picks that you might find tonight. We're doing it virtual. Roger Goodell in his basement. Oh, how fun is this going to be? It is Wake Up Call at SB Nation Radio.
In 43, they put the C, 13 men and Kennedy, aboard the PP-109 to fight the brazen enemy. And off the Isle of Olesana, in the strait beyond Nauru, a Jap destroyer in the night cut the 109 in two.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this is Jimmy Dean, huh? 1962?
Yep. Singing about Kennedy.
Wow. God, wow.
Now, when I first was hearing this song.
PC-109.
Yeah, I was first hearing this song. I mean, he mentions Kennedy a bunch of times in here, and it's like, you know, And towards the end of the song, which we can't get to, it's something about that this made him a stronger man, and it's no surprise that he's president. And then it got me thinking, oh, 1962.
Yeah.
They had no idea what was coming.
I know, they did not know. 62, today on this date in 1962, the Mets won their first game in franchise history after losing their first nine. This hour of Wake Up Call is presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Yep, draft tonight. Can't wait to see it. Can't wait to see what it looks like. By the way, don't if you are going to be on camera tonight, if you are a general manager, do your own little styling, do your own makeup and hair. You know, don't go on your Zoom like you just woke up out of bed.
Wear a shirt.
Wear a shirt, and you know what? Don't kick your family out. Like, have your kids jumping up and down in the background. It'll be fun. We'll add some flavor to your conversations as to why you took this guy or that guy when you're doing your post draft conversations with Kuiper and the boys. Gosh.
There's actually a memo that the NFL released about what to wear and what not to wear.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I did see that. Yeah, make sure you're...
You can't... And there, what I found odd was that there was two references to not... to making sure not to wear anything disparaging against the NFL.
Oh, right. So you can't put a... something like Goodell stinks, like a shirt like that.
Or that infamous Goodell clown shirt.
That's right. You can't wear that. Oh, yeah, that's true.
But yeah, there was a list of, what was it, 15 things.
They gave the 15 guidelines.
Oh, yeah. 15 guidelines.
Well done. The NFL leaves no stone unturned, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing.
Anything that stands out in the guidelines?
Well,
besides
all of them.
Don't pick on the NFL shirt.
We might have to talk about this.
What about branding? So if you're wearing a golf shirt,
no,
it's got a logo on it, like your team logo.
Third party logos other than those of NFL official partners, Nike, Adidas, Under Armour, and New Era.
Oh, okay.
They're prohibited.
You know what the NFL should have done? They should have just shipped everybody shirts and said, here we deal. We either got guidelines or you can just wear this.
Exactly.
Everybody wear this. It should be fun tonight.